The Worm Ouroboros by E.R. Edison. Chapter 24. Part 2. The Lady Mevrian, being escaped to her own chamber in the South Tower, sat by an eastern window that looked across the gardens and the lake, past the sea-locks of Strapardon and the dark hills of Eastmark, to the stately ranges afar which overhang in mid-air Mosedale and Mirkdale and Swart Riverdale and the inland sea of Throwater. The last lights of day still lingered on their loftier summits. On Ironbeak, on the gaunt wall of Scarta, and on the distant twin towers of Dina, seen beyond the lower Mosedale range in the depression of Neverdale House. Behind them rolled up the ascent of heaven, the wheels of quiet night. Holy night, mother of the gods, mother of sleep, tender nurse of all little birds and beasts that dwell in the field, and all tired hearts and weary. Mother besides of strange children, affrights and rapes and midnight murders bold. Mevrian sat there till all the earth was blurred in darkness, and the sky athrob with starlight, for it was yet an hour until the rising of the moon. And she prayed to Lady Artemis, calling her by her secret names and saying, "Goddess and maiden chaste and holy, triune goddess which in heaven art, and on the earth huntress divine, and also hast in the veiled sunless places below earth thy dwelling, viewing the large stations of the dead. Save me and keep me, that am thy maiden still." She turned the ring upon her finger, and scanned in the gathering gloom the bezel thereof, which was of that chrysoprase that is hid in light and seen in darkness, being as a flame by night, but in the daytime yellow or wan. And behold, it palpitated with splendor from withinward, and was as if a thousand golden sparks danced and swirled within the stone. While she pondered what interpretation lay likeliest on this sudden flowering of unaccustomed splendor within the chrysoprase, behold, one of her women of the bedchamber who brought lights, and said, standing before her, "Twain of the Lords of Witchland would speak with your ladyship in private." "Two," said Mevrian. "There's safety yet in numbers. Which be they?" "Highness, they be tall and slim of body. They be black-advised. They bear them discreet as dormice, and, most commendably, sober." Mevrian asked, "Is it the Lord Grow? Hath he a great black beard, much curled and perfumed?" "Highness, I mark not that either weareth a beard," said the woman, "nor their names I know not." "Well," said Mevrian, "admit them, and do thou and thy fellows attend me whiles I give them audience." So it was done, according to her bidding, and there entered in those two sons of Corund. They greeted her with respectful salutations, and Hemming said, "Our errand, most worshipful lady, was for thine own ear only, if it please thee." Mevrian said to her women, "Make fast the doors, and attend me in the antechamber. And now, my lords," said she, and waited for them to begin. She was seated sideways in the window, betwixt the light and the dark. The crystal lamps shining from within the room showed deeper darknesses in her hair than night's darkness without. The curve of her white arms resting in her lap was like the young moon cradled above the sunset. A falling breeze out of the south came laden with the murmur of the sea, far away beyond fields and vineyards, restlessly surging even in that calm weather amid the sea-caves of Strapardon. It was as if the sea and the night enfolding Demonland gasped in indignation at such things as Corineus, holding himself already an undoubted possessor of his desires, devised for that night in Crothering. Those brethren stood abashed in the presence of such rare beauty. Hemming, with a deep breath, spake and said, "Madam, what slender opinion soever thou hast held of us of Witchland, I pray thee be satisfied that I and my kinsmen have sought to thee now with a clean heart to do thee service." "Princes," said she, "scarce might ye blame me did I misdoubt you. Yet, seeing that my life's days have been not among ambidexters and coney-catchers, but lovers of clean hands and open dealing, not even after that which I this night endured will mine heart believe that all civility is worn away in Witchland. Did I not freely receive Corineus himself when I did open my gates to him, firmly believing him to be a king and not a ravening wolf?" Then said Hemming, "Canst thou wear armor, madam? Thou art something of a height with my brother, to bring thee past the guard. If thou go armed, as I shall conduct thee, the wine they have drunken shall be thy minister. I have provided on horse. In the likeness of my young brother, mayst thou ride forth to-night out of this castle and win clean away. But in thine own shape, thou mayst never pass from these thy lodgings, for he hath set a guard thereon. Being resolved, come thereof what may, to visit thee here, this night, in thine own chamber, madam." The sounds of furious revelry floated up from the banquet chamber. Mevrian heard by snatches the voice of Corineus singing an unseemly song. As in the presence of sudden dark influence that threatened an ill she might not comprehend, yet felt her blood quail and her heart grow sick because of it, she looked on those brethren. She said at last, "Was this your plan?" Hemming answered,
"It was the Lord Grow did most ingenuously conceive it. But Corineus, as he hath ever held him in distrust, and most of all when he hath drunken overmuch, keepeth him most firmly at his elbow."
Cargo now did off his armor, and Mevrian, calling in her women to take this and other gear, fared straightway to an inner chamber to change her fashion. Hemming said to his brother,
"Thou shalt need to go about it with great circumspection, to come off when we are gone, so as thou be not espied. Were I thou, I should be tempted for the rareness of the jest to await his coming, and to say whether thou couldst not make as good a counterfeit Mevrian as she a counterfeit Cargo."
"Thou," said Cargo, "mayst well laugh and be gay, thou that must conduct her, and art resolved, I dare lay my head to a turnip, to do thy utmost endeavour to despoil Corineus of that felicity he hath to-night decreed him, and bless thyself therewith."
"Thou hast fallen," answered Hemming, "into a most barbarous thought. Shall my tongue be so false a traitor to mine heart as to say I love not this lady? Compare but her beauty and my youth together, how should it other be? But with such a height of fervour I do love her, that I'd as lief offer violence to a star of heaven as require of her aught but honest."
Said Cargo,
"What said the wise little boy to his eldest brother? Sith thou'st gotten the cake, brother, I must e'en make shift with the crumbs. When you are gone, and all wished and quiet, and I left here amid the waiting women, it shall go hard, but I'll teach him somewhat afore good night."
Now opened the door of the inner chamber, and there stood before them the Lady Mevrian, armed and helmed. She said, 'Tis no light matter to halt before a cripple. Think you this will pass in the dark, lords?"
They answered, "'Twas beyond all commendation, excellent."
"I'll thank thee now, Prince Cargo," said she, stretching out her hand.
He bowed and kissed it in silence.
"This harness," she said, "shall be a keepsake unto me of a noble enemy. Would some day I might call thee friend, for such wise hast thou borne thee this night."
Therewith, bidding young Cargo adieu, she, with his brother, went forth from the chamber, and through the antechamber, to that shadowy stairway where Corineus's soldiers stood sentinel. These, as many more be drowned in the beaker than in the ocean, not overheedful after their tipplings, seeing two go by together with clanking armor, and knowing Hemming's voice when he answered the challenge, made no question, but here were Coran's sons, returning to the banquet. So passed he and she lightly by the sentinels. But as they fared by the lofty corridor without the chamber of the moon, the doors of that chamber opening suddenly left and right, there came forth torchbearers and minstrels two by two, as in a progress, with cymbals clashing and flutes and tambourines, so that the corridor was filled with the flare of flamboys and the din. In the midst walked the Lord Corineus. The lusty blood within him burned scarlet in all his shining face, and made stand the veins like cords on the strong neck and arms and hands of him. The thick curls above his brow, where they strayed below his coronal of sleeping nightshade, were a drip with sweat. Plain it was he was in no good trim after that shrewd knock on the head Astar that day had given him to withstand deep quaffings. He went between Gro and Laxus, swaying heavily now on the arm of this one, now of the other, his right hand beating time to the music of the bridal song. Mevrian whispered to Hemming, "Let us bear out a good face so long as we be alive." They stood aside, hoping to be passed by unnoticed, for retreat nor concealment was there none. But Corineus, his eye lighting on them, stopped and hailed them, catching them each by an arm, and crying, "Hemming, thou art drunk! Cargo, thou art drunk, sweet youth! 'Tis a damnable folly, drink as drunk as you be, and these bonny wenches I've provided you. How shall I satisfy 'em, think ye, when they come to me with their plaints to mourn, that each must sit with a snoring drunkard's head in her lap the night long?" Mevrian, as if she had all her part by rote, was leaned this while heavily upon Hemming, hanging her head. Hemming could think on naught likelier to say than,
"Truly, O Corineus, we be sober."
"Thou liest," said Corineus. "'Twas ever sign manifest of drunkenness to deny it. Look you, my lords, I deny not I am drunk. Therefore is sign manifest I am drunk. Sign manifest I am sober. But the hour calleth to other work than questioning of these high matters. Set on."
So speaking, he reeled heavily against Gro, and, as if moved by some airy influence that whispering him of schemings afoot, yet conspired with the wine that he had drunken to make him look all otherwhere for treason than where it lay under his hand to discover it, gripped Gro by the arm, saying,
"Bide by me, goblin, thou wert best. I do love thee very discreetly, and will still hold thee by the ears to see thou bite me not, nor go no more a-gadding."
being by such happy fortune delivered out of this peril, Hemming and Mevrian, with what prudent haste they might, and without mishap or hindrance, got them their horses, and fared forth of the main gate between the marble hippogriffs, whose mighty forms shone above them stark in the low beams of the rising moon. So they rode silently through the gardens and the home meads, and thence to the wild woods beyond, quickening now their pace to a gallop on the yielding turf. So hard they rode, the air of the windless April night was lashed into storm about their faces. The trample and thunder of hoofbeats and the flying glimpses of the trees were, to young Hemming, but an undertone to the thunder of the blood which night and speed and that lady galloping beside him, knee to knee, set a gallop within him. But to Mevrian's soul, as she galloped along those woodland rides, those moonlight glades, these things and night and the steadfast stars attuned a heavenlier music, so that she waxed momently wondrous peaceful at heart, as with the most firm assurance that not without the abiding glory of demon-land must the great mutations of the world be acted, and but for a little should their evil willers usurp her dear brother's seat in Crothering. They drew rein in a clearing beside a broad stretch of water. Pine woods rose from its further edge, shadowy in the moon's shine. Mevrian rode to a little eminence that stood above the water, and turned her eyes toward Crothering. Save by her instructed and loving eye, scarce might it be seen, many miles away, be east of them, dimmed in the obscure soft radiance under the moon. So sat she a while, looking on golden Crothering, while her horse grazed quietly, and Hemming, at her elbow, held his peace, only beholding her. At last, looking back and meeting his gaze, "Prince Hemming," she said, "from this place goeth a hidden path north about beside the firth, and a dry road over the marsh, and a ford and an upland horseway leadeth into Westmark. Here and allwheres in Demonland I might fare blindfold, and here I'll say farewell. My tongue is a poor orator, but I mind me of the words of the poet where he saith, 'My mind is like to the asbeston stone, which, if it once be heat in flames of fire, denieth to become uncold again.' Be the latter issue of these wars in my great kinsman's victory, as I most firmly trow it shall be, or in Gorice's his, I shall not forget this experiment of your nobility manifested unto me this night." But Hemming, still beholding her, answered not a word. She said, "How fares the queen, thy stepmother? Seven summers ago this summer I was in Norvasp at Lord Corran's wedding feast, and stood by her at the bridal. Is she yet so fair?" He answered, "Madam, as June bringeth the golden rose unto perfection, so waxeth her beauty with the years." "She and I," said Mevrian, "were playmates, she the elder by 2 summers. Is she yet so masterful?"
"Madam, she is a queen," said Hemming,
nailing his very eyes on Mevrian. Her face half turned toward him, sweet mouth half closed, clear eyes uplifted toward the east, showed dim in the glamour of the moon, and the lilt of her body was as a lily fallen a-dreaming beside some enchanted lake at midnight. With a dry throat he said,
"Lady, until tonight I had not supposed there lived on earth a woman more beautiful than she."
Therewith the love that was in him went like a wind and like an upswooping darkness athwart his brain. As one who has too long, unbold, unresolved, delayed to lift that door's latch which must open on his heart's true home, he caught his arms about her. Her cheek was soft to his kiss, but deadly cold. Her eyes like a wild bird's caught in a purse-net. His brother's armor that cased her body was not so dead nor so hard under his hand, as to his love, that yielding cheek, that alien look. He said, as one a stagger for his wits in the presence of some unlooked-for chance,
"Thou dost not love me?"
Meverian shook her head, putting him gently away. Like the passing of a fire on a dry heath in summer, the flame of his passion was passed by, leaving but a smoldering desolation of scornful, sullen wrath, wrath at himself and fate. He said, in a low, shamed voice,
"I pray you forgive me, madam."
Meverian said, "Prince, the gods give thee good night. Be kind to Cruthering. I have left there an evil steward." So saying, she reined up her horse's head and turned down westward toward the firth. Hemming watched her an instant, his brain a-reel. Then, striking spurs to his horse's flanks so that the horse reared and plunged, he rode away at a great pace east again through the woods to Cruthering. End of chapter 24.